I'm John Batzer, visiting with Thomas Savage, a research fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, and he introduces me into Hard Times in Chicago, imminent. And the introduction is convincing. So I've told Thomas to what is to be done. He's at the American Institute for Economic Research, and therefore there is a study, a series of studies that point the way forward. The first thing is you've got to admit you have a problem. Thomas, what is cartel federalism?
So cartel federalism is an idea brought out, made popular by legal scholar Michael Grava, where he compares the different types of federalism in a government system. Think of the United States. Basic competitive federalism is where states have that kind of healthy competition between one another, where they want to create the best legal institutions, whether that be low taxes, easy taxes, keeping the general peace, and different aspects of that attract Americans. Americans vote with their feet and say, I want to raise my family here. I want to start a business here. I want to live here. I want to work here. Compare that with cartel federalism. Cartel federalism is where states band together and seek funding from the federal government to fund various projects for themselves at the expense of taxpayers in other states. And that's a bit of what we're seeing nowadays. The data from the National Association of State Budget Officers find that the average state gets about 35% of its expenditures funded by federal transfers. And so these transfers both give the federal government greater control over state budgets because all of that funding has terms and conditions that get baked into it. And state leaders are also happy to accept that money as well because it enables them to increase spending at the cost to federal taxpayers in other states.
Is that where the state is feeding on the money of other states? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, specifically, federal taxes paid for by individuals in other states. So if, for example, if you are in a state that one of the 10 remaining states that has not expanded Medicaid, your federal tax dollars are still going toward the Medicaid expansion funding for the federal government in the 40 other states that have expanded Medicaid. While it's not directly coming out of the state government's coffers, it is being borne by the taxpayers, those households, the individuals, the businesses that are paying federal taxes.
And you must agree to obey federal guidelines when you accept that Medicare, Medicaid money, I believe. And therefore, what we have here is the federal government set this system up and it makes it vulnerable for exploitation. Is this witting or did this come about accidentally? They didn't see it coming.
Well, I think there may have been some intention in that to garner support for these federal programs, saying, hey, these programs will aid your state. But in some respects, too, states will learn how to game the system.
Yeah.
A perfect example of this is even with the pandemic funding, the Treasury very clearly stipulated that states could not use funding from the CARES Act to fund public pension systems. However, there's a great paper out of the American Enterprise Institute that found, well, money is fungible, and states, even especially a state like Illinois, was able to get creative with how revenue was allocated. And so a good chunk of the CARES Act funding went into their public pension coffers anyway, despite the explicit ban of that the Treasury had put it on for doing so.
Chicago lives on transfer funds. You say 12%. They've always lived on it. They're addicted to it. So, all right, let's get a solution here. In New York, they created MAC. What was that, and would that work?
So that was the Municipal Asset Corporation. It was a combination of state and federal oversight. Now, mind you, this was for the New York City government default there. I think potentially something like this could work. However, I worry about the precedents that were set by the Federal Reserve's lending facility that Illinois took advantage of, because it encourages Congress to bring what could be potentially contentious credit allocation programs and push that off on the Fed, they could wash their hands of it and say, well, this might hurt my chances at reelection. We'll make the Fed do it, and I can blame the Fed if my constituents don't like it. I think, though, if you're looking at a serious restructuring program, and they are going to go to Washington for help, there have to be serious terms and conditions with the assistance, specifically that of reforming the budget so that spending is brought in line with the growth rate of population and inflation, and with population contracting in Illinois, especially net domestic outmigration, the spending should be pared down to reflect that. And then on top of that, too, it should be restructured so that benefits, any of those public pension benefits for new hires, ends up reflecting what the state could feasibly afford. And in the same respect, having those strict rules being put in place to the states requires, having that in could help prevent the crisis from happening again and prevent, the state being stuck in a cycle of dependency where they get bailed out, they continue being reckless, and then they go, once things go wrong, they go back to Washington for another bailout.
If we were cynical men, we'd mention politics at this point. We're not, but I'm going to mention them. J.B. Pritzker is a very popular figure in Illinois. He's a very powerful figure in the Democratic Party. The presumption is he will be part of the conversation for the open White House in 2028. Does this dilemma burden him in the state or in the city, or is this understood to be blamed on Washington or some other entity?
Well, we'll see. If Governor Pritzker decides to run, we'll see if or where he shifts the blame. But really, I think as a leader, you should have the attitude that the buck stops with you. And Governor Pritzker has overseen some really poor financial management, not just of the city of Chicago, which he may be able to push blame on the mayor's office and especially the mayors of the past decade or so, but really the finances of the state as well. He's overseen the state making promises it can't afford to keep. And then, if you're looking at how poorly Illinois has been managed, especially in the past couple of years, where we've seen businesses that have been in Illinois since their creation, like Boeing and Caterpillar, the construction company Caterpillar there, have left Illinois for lower tax states. That is a good indicator of how he would run the budget, the finances of the rest of the country. And so hopefully Americans see that and really, hopefully they see that and they see him for, they see him for the mismanagement that he's overseen.
Right now, Thomas, we have a minute left. Are they discussing anything comparable to your full-scale solution metrics here? Is that going on in the legislature in Springfield or in the city council in Chicago, a way out, or are they just letting it drift? Right now, 30 seconds.
Unfortunately, they seem to be keeping their heads in the sand and letting it drift. Governor Pritzker was happy to, did not talk about the city's mismanagement enough. And it seems to be pedal to the metal with the car going over the fiscal cliff. Hopefully that changes soon.
Thomas Savage, research fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, writing of Chicago for Civitas Outlook at the Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.